Welcome to Extra Points. Now here's your host, Cousin Sal, and his pal, Dave Damashek.
All right, welcome to the Extra Points podcast. It's Cousin Sal coming to you with his good pal, Dave Damashek. Monday, April 5th, Championship Monday on the basketball side. Yes, the NCAA produced a fun Final Four. The two best number ones squaring off tonight, Dave, Baylor and Gonzaga. Let's just get it out of the way. You need to apologize, not even to me, but to everybody out there for your coin flip analogy.
Hey,
but
listen,
we're here. Go ahead.
You know me. I'm a man of the highest integrity, Sal.
Yes.
And, you know, like Jerry Orbach at the end of Dirty Dancing, when I'm wrong, I say I'm wrong. I was wrong about this tournament. We all got what we wanted. We got some fun upsets. We got some memorable moments. And here we have it. The clear-cut two best teams. We knew these were the two best teams 2.5, 3 months ago. And now here we are coming out clean on the other side after crawling through, I don't know how many court lengths of mediocrity. But listen, we got what we wanted here. And maybe more importantly, let's wait and see what happens on Monday night, but let's not push our luck. However this one winds up, we got an all-time classic, perhaps even the greatest game in the history of the sport, or at least since you and me have been watching. I don't know what happened in 1957, but to my eyeballs, I think that's the best game at this level of the sport I've ever watched, and that's quite a thing.
You're talking about UCLA and Gonzaga?
That's the, yeah. That's the one.
Not the other. Yes.
No, I don't want to get confused with this. Yes.
They were a 14-point underdog, and we all thought it was too many points, but it was like, oh boy, but Gonzaga just buries everybody. And even in this one, they scored 93 points. I think it was the best game I've seen. I don't know, at least in 25 years. I was going over a lot of the other ones, and UNLV, Duke, and you had your Indiana Syracuse. There's so many good ones. But this one, just the fact that they wouldn't go away. I mean, they played as well as you could play losing a game. I know that's, you know, whatever. That's cliche. But they played great defensively for a team that gave up 93 points. They got to their spots. UCLA did. There's I wouldn't even say questionable, was the right call on Johnny Juzang right at the end of regulation. That block charge call was huge with 1.5 or 1.7. Yeah, they called it right. They called it a charge and kept Gonzaga alive, and they went to overtime. But I think it had one of the best sequences, Dave. You know what I'm talking about with that Suggs drop a block on Riley and then the subsequent pass between four defenders to Time with about 2 minutes left, put Gonzaga up by two, right?
I like that you try to defend the honor of Timmy by like giving him some sort of exotic pronunciation on his surname. Time. Like it makes him say, it gives him gravitas. I think it's funny that there's a guy named Timmy who is apparently the personification of leverage in this Final Four. The block, I know people immediately spoke up. I don't want to get down about the need to express cynicism from so many people about like the announcement when you say best college basketball game ever. And people immediately have to say, too soon, not allowed. Can't say that. You're not allowed. The people have to cut you off at the knees about anything that happened. Joe, hate to say it. Suggs, that was a foul. That wasn't a clean block. Like, all right, just shut up.
I feel it's the other way. People don't even want to think about the past. Like, yeah, that was definitely the best I've ever seen. But yeah,
it's funny.
You get both camps.
It is funny. Yeah, I guess we do hear both of those. That Suggs bounce, the recognition. I mean, he makes that monstrous block. He turns his head around over his left shoulder to see the kid streaking up the floor, and without barely batting an eye, he doesn't gather himself. He just, you know, loads it up like a quarterback, like the quarterback he was, mm-hmm. and just bounced it perfectly. I mean, in a gigantic spot in the game, in his life and everything, to pull that off, given the stakes of that, I mean, remarkable. And then obviously he banks it in, and talk about the cynicism people have had to use their precious hours, precious moments here on the big blue marble to say, yeah, but that was a lucky shot. I don't feel like that wasn't Julian Edelman David Tyree kind of fluke, though, right? I mean, he didn't like throw it the length of the court blindly or anything. I mean, like, he got a pretty decent.
What do you
got
to do? Do you have to put percentages on these things? Probably, you know, 10-12% that it goes in. So yeah, it's lucky, but he lined it up. He got a good shot and everything else. I don't know, whatever. People are discrediting. People are not really discrediting that it was a great game because of the ending. I mean, that's stupid. No one who says it believes it. No one I work with who says it believes it. Good luck to you with that narrative the rest of the way. I get it. You know, I brought up UNLV and Duke. Leitner hit two free throws with 12 seconds left to go up 79-77. So, okay. So that's it. That's the ending it has to be. That's less fluky. So that... it has to be an ending like that to be satisfactory.
I mean, listen, I you know, the immaculate reception, I don't remember it. Not like I was watching the game or anything, but I kind of get the spirit of saying, like, yeah, if it just ends up on a junk play, the holy roller, if you know what that is, when yeah. Stabler kind of rolled it out in 78 and Dave Casper fell out on the end zone in Jack Murphy Stadium. Like, that's fluky and vaguely unsatisfying, but if you're on the winning side, you take it. I get the idea of it. It's sort of why this maybe is the greatest game of all time in college basketball, because both teams played so well throughout the game. There are very few flukes, and like you say, I think the charge call is right. I'm really getting nitpicky, because if UCLA was going to win that one at the buzzer in regulation, I wish Ju Zhang would have pulled up. I'm not sure exactly what he was looking at, other than maybe if I take it at Timmy, I'll create the contact and follow him out, and then we'll get to over. I find it hard to.
I just think he thought he could get to the spot faster. I don't know. He had been such a monster. Boy, all those guys were so much fun to watch.
Everybody,
right?
Tiger Campbell. As they say, you know, it's like, it's crazy that it's 19-year-olds. Can you imagine? I mean, I couldn't do that at any point in my life. I would never be that good under pressure at any single deed. At anything, but these are 19, 20 year old kids making these moments that are going to follow. That's why I always feel bad for the kid who misses free throws with 1 second left on the clock. Cause I feel like, boy, that's going to plague. That's why I denounce. You think I'm a curmudgeon about the tournament, maybe rivaling my most curmudgeonly sports opinion of that March Madness isn't the greatest evaluator of who the best team is. I think the Little League World Series, we should not have this on national TV. This is going to create emotional scars for kids. It's cool if you're on the winning side. If you hit a home run and you're 11, you're probably going to feel good about yourself for the next 80 years. But what about the kid who the ball goes through his legs? I'm thinking about the kids who are a lot like young Dave Damashek was. It haunts me enough, my failures on the diamond in Little League in Churchill, Pennsylvania. Well, what if it was watched by 5 million people? I can't even imagine damage that might have done.
Maybe that's why you didn't go far in Little League. I don't know. These kids got it. They got it. They're all right. They got moxie. They're fine. They move on. I think it was, we can go back and forth with the greatest games ever, but, I think it was, first of all, would you take Jalen Suggs as quarterback of the Steelers? He was Mr. Minnesota. He won best basketball player and football player in the state of Minnesota.
A lot of the pundits out there have said that the Steelers' biggest mistake this offseason was not replacing Ben Roethlisberger with Jalen Suggs. That's
interesting.
That's a lot of the buzz out there right now.
Wow.
Major failure in free agency. Yeah, I did immediately. It's funny. I had to look at the bottom feeders of the NBA just to make sure. I mean, not with the draft lottery, it's not exact who's going to wind up with that. But it is fun to kind of look ahead by 2 months and play the game of like who, if it's the T-Wolves or whomever, which of those three or four guys that are under consideration you're going to want. Suggs now suddenly, we've been talking about that. This freshman season ranks right up there with all time great guard seasons we've ever seen in our lifetime, in our lives. And
well, it seems to be a coin flip with Cunningham now for first pick with Cade Cunningham and Suggs. So
It's
unless you don't need a guard, and then Mobley, right. I guess, jumps up.
Here's what you want to curmudgeonly take. I hope none of them go to the NBA. The NBA is going to ruin them. Yeah, to me, this is why college basketball, even with the guys only sticking around for a year, it's still so much better and so much purer than the NBA. I mean, you have a team like UCLA, right? I think the Final Four was ideal to set up. You have two great teams in Baylor and Gonzaga. You have an excellent team in Houston, number two seed, really just beat up on everyone all year too, in a less than terrific conference, but whatever. And then you got the team that just played out of their mind, UCLA, that didn't really belong there, but just they played out of their mind for 2 weeks. So let's see what they could do. And UCLA plays Michigan, a very good team, and just goes, and what do? They a different style. They play in the low 50s and win that game. And then come back 4 days later, different style matchup against Gonzaga, a game in the 90s, and almost win that game. Like, that to me is the difference. Like, the style matchups, you don't get that in the pros. You'll get some teams that shoot a few fewer threes here and there, but I love the emotion. I love the style matchups and everything else at the NCAA tournament and just college basketball brings to us. I don't know. I'm just so
I think
down
that's
on
great. I think that's exactly right. It's satisfying in football terms. We grew up in an age where different regions played different brands of ball almost to the conference, like almost across the board. If one powerhouse team in a conference was playing that kind of ball, then everybody followed suit. And that's what made the bowl game so much fun was the stylistic differences. A Florida team, Miami's going to play rugged, Penn State or Oklahoma, who's going to try and grind you and throw the ball three times over the course of 60 minutes. Those stylistic things are different. Now, the NFL has more stylistic difference than college football does. College basketball, within, like you say, within a week span, that's what was weird. I mean, Charles Barkley and anybody else weighing in was like, well, if this score goes over, if both teams are in the 70s, UCLA has no chance based on what we just saw. I was like, the UCLA was winning games because they were they kept Michigan under 50 points. So obviously,
that was the cookie cutter way to evaluate this.
Exactly.
Right? UCLA is going to get killed. They couldn't score 52 against Michigan. Like, all right, well, no, they'll play up and down. They'll adjust. That's what good coaching does, right? And both
these teams have been going over, I think, Baylor and the Zags have lately been going over. And well, so this, I guess that makes, I don't, but based on what you're saying, I'm going against everything I just said about admiring people's young guys' ability to deal with the pressure of it. I don't know. This feels like a huge, given high stakes and pressure, I feel like it goes down. It depresses scoring a little bit. That's anecdotal on my part, though. Is that true, Sal?
What, just that in just in general? I mean, I have a whole theory on the Final Four and the lights and the cavernous stadium and people shooting into the lights and no quarterback throws into the lights because bad things happen and everything, and it didn't matter. There were points all over the place. I mean, for God's sakes, Baylor clamped down on Houston except for one player. They allowed 20 points in the first half, and it still ended up going over. So I don't know. These games are going over by accident. I guess we should pick it. I mean, FanDuel has Gonzaga favored by 4.5 points. The over-under is 159. You want to go first, Dave? Who do you like?
That's fine. I am going to go with it first as the greatest college basketball game of all time. Barely nudging aside Christian Laettner over Jamal Mashburn and company, UK. A great game. Leaving in the dust, Villanova v. UNC in 2016. The over my shoulder, the 83 final, Houston.
Right.
Phi Slamma Jamma being vanquished by Jimmy V. Those would be my top four entries for best game for this game looking a few hours ahead here. I'm going to go with the Zags. I know Baylor obviously has been rolling themselves. They've covered every game this tournament. And again, this is meaningless, I suppose, but I'm going to say it anyway. Is I said before this game, you said 14.5. For some reason, once that hook showed up, I decided that's too much. This is crazy. 14.5.
It's two touchdowns. They have to go for a 2-point conversion somewhere. Right.
That swung it for me enough. And I changed at the 11th hour. I flipped over to UCLA just because, like we've been talking about, no team just no team just dominates. And I know that doesn't apply to Baylor if they win by a point here, but I mean, I think that's scare. I think the better team historically when we is Gonzaga, right? And it's nature, the stylistic approach that Baylor has could spook some of the, but I like the individual talent on Gonzaga that Gonzaga will have on the floor to defeat what Baylor is doing defensively. I'm taking the Zags minus the 4.5.
Interesting. That's okay. I mean, not that interesting. I think you're right. Like we said, every team has a bump in the road, right? Even that great UCLA team, they had the Tyus Edney run to beat Missouri earlier in the tournament to get them out. You brought up Leitner, obviously the crazy shot against Kentucky. That was a great team. That had to happen. Gonzaga might have had their speed bump here, and now they try to finish off the undefeated season. I say not so fast. I'm taking Baylor plus the points and on the money line. I think Timmy's going to get his points, right? He's just too many easy points in the paint. If these guards clamp down on Gonzaga's shooters, Kispert, he can't go crazy. I mean, they find their spots behind the arc. That's the thing with this Gonzaga team. It doesn't matter how deep they are. But if they can control Kispert, if they can control Suggs, and, you know, Davion Mitchell puts this team on his shoulders, I really think it's going to be different. I don't see scoring around 20 points again. They're really going to focus on defending these guys. And like I said, Timmy gets his easy points, but 82-75. Yes, 75 for the Zags. Baylor wins. Not only do they win convincingly. 82-75, barely under the 159. There you go. That's my pick.
I'm inclined. Can I tell you something? Go ahead. I don't like the jive. I'm inclined to agree with you.
You can't change your mind.
Myself.
What do you mean?
I'm not changing. I'm going to stick with it. But my logic is based on, like I say, Baylor is effective against any collective of human, almost any collective of human beings, because that pressure defensively is just unrivaled. And so it's a shock, I'm sure, to whoever is in there against it. It's one of those things you have to be in there against. Mm-hmm. Again, though, I'm riding with individual talent. The Gonzaga has enough guys who can individually defeat that. And that's what it takes. When you have two guys, Suggs, I was looking at specifically, his individual total is 15.5. And I was really on the fence. Do I go with Suggs? I don't know. They might double him to the point. They might pressure him. Somebody is going to rise up and be the difference maker. I just can't identify whether it's Suggs or Timmy or who it is.
Yeah, but all those guys are around 16.5, 15.5, except Timmy, who's 21, I believe. But no one's as good or as bad as the last game they played. But I just look at Baylor, and I think they're for real on defense. You know, Houston is not, you know, they're not Drake going in there. They're probably not Gonzaga, but they're not Drake. They lived on outside shooting and rebounding the ball, especially offensive rebounds. And Baylor swallowed them up. I mean, they held them. They're not going to hold Gonzaga to 20. But aside from Sasser, who I think had 17 of the 20 in the first half, I mean, that was a shellacking. And it continued, and they never let him back in the game. And I don't know. Maybe say Baylor is better overall.
Maybe here's the analogy is the 2000 Baltimore Ravens, is that only once this is finished, once they vanquish this Gonzaga team, will we say like, oh yeah, it was there right in front of us the whole time. And in the same way that the reason Baltimore didn't go undefeated that year is because they had Tony Banks in the middle of the season and they couldn't score a touchdown. This is COVID. Tony Banks equals COVID. COVID got in the way of Baylor and they stumbled there, but now they're back in form. And maybe it's just that generational kind of defensive system that they have going in Baylor this particular season, that it's just going to smother everybody, sort of like the Ravens went into Oakland and the high-octane Raiders offense that year, MVP Rich Gannon, like, wow, they're going to get theirs once they face the best offense in the
business.
I lost
so much money shorting that team.
And then the Ravens just like steamrolled them. You're like, oh, yeah, I see. I guess that's what we should have understood the whole way. Wonder if it's because Baylor, the counter to my side is you don't just run the table. You don't just blow out everybody six times over to win a national championship in March Madness. Maybe that's what will happen here. We'll be like, they just smothered everybody for 3 weeks. And that's that.
Right. They had trouble with Villanova in the first half, but other than that, they pulled away and They were just all over. Yeah, it's going to be Davion Mitchell. It's going to be, can he get to the paint? Can he get fouled? You know, the stop and go, dribble penetration. I think he's the key. Obviously, Maceo Teague is infuriating. I bet Maceo Teague over 15 and a half points the other day. He had zero at half and ended with 11 or 13. But they I don't know. They end up not depending on one player there. Not that Gonzaga does either. But I really think this is a good game to the end and Baylor pulls away. Let's ask this. Back to the Suggs banker at the buzzer in overtime. Greatest college feat. What would you say it is, Dave? I'm going to put odds on this, all right? We're going to go to the Riverboat Casino. Is it game-winning touchdown to win the NCAA title game, 2-1 odds, a three-pointer at the buzzer in an NCAA Final Four game, 3-1 odds? Is it the game-winning goal in the Frozen Four at 15-1 odds? Don't hear that a lot. Or is it not getting pregnant, 25-1 odds? Oh, my God. All those terrible walks to the Planned Parenthood. You're choking on your heart. I don't know. Maybe this is just me. Maybe this is just me, Dave. I went through it.
Hey, first of all, you know me.
I have a 30-year-old kid. Yeah.
First of all, I love love. So I'm not going to, and you know, we're talking about clutch moments in sports, in the game of life.
Yeah.
I know it's weird. It's weird to me. It's weird to the man in the mirror that this is the case. There is no one I've ever come in contact with, a grown man, who is less macho than the man in the mirror is. And yet, like Mark Lemke, the second baseman, the light-hitting second baseman for the Atlanta Braves, who would do nothing for 6 months on end. But then, when October would come around, that's when he got his licks in. You know what? When it's go time, when it's time to make a baby, okay, no one more clutch than David.
That's true. Well, you weren't in college, though, right? It's scary. It's scary. It belongs up there in the feats. But
I admire. No, I'm just saying I admire it. So, of course, I'm not going to say not getting pregnant. That's
or you could take the field.
My entire way.
You could take the field, Dave, at even odds. What's
your
choice?
I'm going to go with, well, first of all, here we can do it deductively. Is that what it is, or just eliminate?
We'll see, I guess.
I don't know what it is. But either way, Vince Young, we saw somebody score a touchdown to win it.
Right.
Did you think that was better than what Jalen Suggs did or what Christian Laettner did? I think the basketball one's better than the football.
Oh, interesting. Well, this is a personal choice, I think.
I'm looking at examples that we have. And then I'll say Trump by both, not in the zeitgeist of self-proclaimed sports fans. I don't know how many people care about the Frozen Four when it goes down, but if you ever watch it, I like the moment, removing college or whatever. I think the greatest thing is the overtime winner in hockey, because when you watch the replays forever, you watch the guy and you know, like, man, in about 3 seconds from now, that guy is going to be euphoric. But he doesn't know what's about to happen. He's just, you know, he's skating in the right circle there. He doesn't know the puck's about to land on his stick, and he's going to bury it, and he's going to be a hero for all of time. But that's about to happen. There's something about that swing instantaneously of the all puck hitting his stick, and it's in the back of the goal, and everybody in the joint at one. That's the best looking. That's the best visual there is in sports, right? Everybody sitting there, and then it one behind the goal. The fans all rising up behind. I'm going to go with that one.
You're going with the hockey. All right. I mean, it ends up being what you like, because I'm going off the board and I'm going wrestling. And I think especially, well, you laugh, but if you're, you know, a 190 pounder, 215 pounder, and you're winning the NCAA title in wrestling, you can make a claim for being the toughest 20-year-old in the country. You can make that claim. If you're beating up kids from Iowa and Penn State and Oklahoma State, and you end up with a title, that's it. I mean, there's no better. Mikey Meatballs agrees, right? Mikey Meatballs, give me a thumbs up. Come on.
Yeah, 100%.
That's it. There you go. You can't.
I remember when Sal, I've seen the grainy footage of that. Sal used to vanquish his foes, and then he would go and he'd get this big canvas sack and be like, what's he doing now? And he'd go and he would dump a giant snake on his foe. And he'd be like, what the hell?
That's different,
humiliating, Sal. Don't do that. And Mikey Meatballs would dump spaghetti sauce on people.
It's a different kind of wrestling.
But the snake was really weird.
It's not
that
kind of wrestling.
Right after he'd suplex them. Oh, congratulations, by the way. Big news for you, John Cena, your fellow professional wrestler. Now he's a professional grade relationship you have.
I've met him. I've not seen him in years, a couple of years now. But I've met him about a half a dozen times. Always nice to me. Follows me yesterday on Twitter. And I got excited. And then I saw he follows 237,000 people, I think. Let's look at that. Joel Solomon or Jim Cunningham. Take a look. He follows
a fraction of the world's population.
So. Is it? Yeah.
237 or whatever small. It is. That's good.
I guess so. What does he follow? Can we see?
I guess 236,000.
Oh, 236,000. That takes so much. It takes a lot of time, right? Who has the time to follow that?
Right, exactly. His scrolling through the Twitter must be is a different experience than one than I have. Yeah, I have Ellen following me.
Right, yes.
And she's got like a million people who she follows, which makes it a little less flattering. Blocked by anybody that you're aware of?
I'm blocked by Booger McFarlane.
Really? For?
I made fun of him one too many times. I deserve it. I think I would block him I would block people for what I said about Booger. But I just, I don't know. I don't think he should be.
But Jason Witten's giving you a pass. Huh? He grandfathered you in. We root for the same football team.
I think so I grandfathered him in too by not going too heavy on the thing.
That checks.
Why? Who blocks you?
Well, Vontez Perfect, and I wear that like a badge of honor.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
And although it's you know, hey, Vontez, I didn't do anything to you. You're the one who did it. I just like to show clips of you.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me laugh. And then you block me for it. I don't know what gives with that. The weirder one is Josina Anderson.
Oh.
Like, wow. What? What?
What'd you say?
Where did things ever get sideways between me and Josina Anderson that she's like, yep.
Well, you could look it up. I mean, I'm sure you could look up what you've said about her.
It's easy enough. It's a weird thing.
All right,
Joel
Solomon, get to the bottom of this. What happened?
Maybe she didn't see eye to eye with Dave on Fruit of the Year, probably.
Yeah, maybe.
Don't be a wise ass, Joe. No one likes that.
Yeah, Dave's taking enough heat for Fruit of the Year. My God. Let's play the Barkley clip. Now, listen, I don't want Charles Barkley to block me on Twitter. He's the greatest. He really is. And I cut him a lot of more slack than I do anyone else with something like this. But Jim, let's play this clip.
The dip between Baylor and Gonzaga and these other teams. Houston got some Joes. All these teams got some Joes. These the only two guys got Jims and Joes. And that's what win games. A lot of teams got Jims and Jims. A lot of teams got some Joes. Baylor and Gonzaga, they're the only two teams in the tournament got Jims and Joes. Well, if you're Kelvin Sampson.
Well, if you're Kelvin Sampson. That's the response to that.
What in hell? I was just over the moon. I love getting the kibitz with you a couple times a week here, Sal. Little did I know this whole time that the two guys who you only periodically hear jump on the mic during extra points are referred to by Chaz Barkley as apparently the linchpins to college basketball success. We have producer Jim and producer Joel.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, we got the Jims and Joels.
Because I think that's what Chaz was doing. He was dropping the L with his Southern.
Oh, is that what was going on?
Some got Jims. Some got two Jims. Some people got Joel.
And we got both.
You need Jim and Joels. That's pretty cool, guys. Muzzle tough.
Jim and Joel, did you ever think of it that way? It is interesting that he would include you guys.
No, never thought of it that way.
No. We got the Jims and Joels, and he's saying it with such a serious face, and yet I kind of understand what the hell he's saying.
I would like to know, Joel, can you explain which is better? Was he saying that you're better off with all Joels or all Jims, or it's the magic of Jim and Joel together? Because he did say at one point, he's like, everybody's got some Jims. Or wait, did everybody have some Joels? Everybody has some Joes.
Yeah.
But only some team have Joes and Jims.
Right.
But then he said something about the other teams have all Jims. And it seems like if Jim needs to be sprinkled in with the Joel, then wouldn't you want to have all Jims? Joe, how say you?
I think it's best if you have both, but really you need a Jimmy Joel. like a Jimmy John. Someone should just get a like a Jimmy Joel.
Oh,
that might be, or a Joel. Like if you have a Joel,
Jimmy Joel.
Yeah, Jimmy Joel.
So, yeah, like an Embiid. Yeah.
But oh, I don't go anywhere without Jim. I really don't.
And he doesn't go anywhere at all. So that's that works out. And then you throw a meatballs in there. Yeah, it gets confusing. I got to say, I'm trying to think, like, were you a big fan of Madden? Like in the 90s, big fan. Sure. I think at one point I was like, this guy could do no wrong. I love him. I hope he sticks around forever. And then by the last 5 or 6 years, you're like, all right. That's enough. And I pray it doesn't get that way with Barkley. I love Barkley. And I think he's just screwing us with us with the Jims and Joes. I've heard that before. That used to be a rant of mine. Like when idiot like analysis would be like, listen, it's not about the X's and O's. It's about the Jims and Joes. But now Barkley has turned this thing on its head and said teams need Jims and Joes, right? There's a difference somehow.
It's really crazy. I mean, I think what we need to bring it on home is Jim and Joel to like be imposed on Charles Barkley's shoulders as his personal angel and devil, and should weigh in on the veracity of what Chaz Barkley is saying at any given time.
I like that.
When he says something like, just freeze frame, and then Jim and Joel explain to the rest of us what Chaz Barkley just said to make some sense of it. Because on face, I'm still grappling with what exactly is the message of that. And did he get it right? Can he claim victory? Like, could Chaz Barkley say right now, like, told you about the Jims and Joes, and now here we are. And like, what pushback could anybody provide? Because nobody understood what it meant in the first place.
Right. So wait, but do we look at the roster? Do either of these guys have any of those? Gonzaga has a Joel?
Gonzaga has Joel IA.
Oh yeah. He is a Joel. Yeah, right.
But he's a Joel. They actually don't have any Jim and Joes. So Dave is right here.
Yeah, you're right. Chuck's got to check the roster. And none of these teams have Jims or Joes. I get what he's saying. You can't have one type of player, right? And when this thing, all of one type of player. But that's fine. I don't think that's the case for just these two teams.
I guess that's what he meant. Look at you, giving him the benefit of the doubt.
I love it. Please
don't like giving a call. Like he complains about Michael Jordan getting too many calls. You're giving Chaz Barkley the broadcasting call. Like, just give it to him. That was good.
They let it go though. No one commented. Kenny Smith's like, all right, I got to talk about Kelvin Sampson here.
Isn't that right? The Clark Kellogg's like, well, I mean, with your Kelvin saying, like, no, we're not talking about anybody named Kelvin or Samson right now. Please keep up there, Clark Kellogg.
We need to do 20 minutes on Jims and Joes.
Right. If that was you or I or me, I'd be like, whoa, Chaz, whoa.
Right.
What the hell are you talking about? Which is the better one, though? What if I had to choose? Who would win in a game of all Jims, a team of all Jims versus a team of all Joes? Who's the favorite in that one then?
You know? Right. Interesting. You got Joe Dumars. You got Jimmy Butler. I'm trying to think. I'm trying to go all over.
There was
all
Joe Smith.
Joe Smith.
Most boring named pretty good player in sports history.
Yeah. Jimmy. Yeah.
Joe. Yeah. I hadn't thought about that. How many you got?
Who's our friend? Dumars. The Ohio State. It's Joe Harris now. And there's,
Jimmy Jackson.
Jimmy Jackson. That's what I was thinking. Ohio State. Yes. Our guy. There's so
Jimmy
much
Harden.
To think about. But they only do have one Joel. You're right, Joel. And that's for Gonzaga. Hey, what do we think about cutting down the nets? We like this tradition. Now, they usually do it. Did they do it for the region? I don't think they did it for the region. They usually do it for they usually do it for the conference tournament. The team that wins cuts down the nets. They do it for the region, and then they do it for the championship. But in this case, the region is in the same arena as the championship game. So I think they skipped it. I think we would have seen it. I didn't see even a frame of that.
Maybe they did, but I've long said, not only do I like it at the college basketball level, I don't know why NBA teams don't do the same thing. Why does it drop off at college? It's a cool deed. It's not something that somehow is inherently collegiate. Why wouldn't the NBA guys do the same thing? It's odd.
Right. Fact. Or maybe they get their haircuts, their beloved haircuts right there on the ladder. Right.
I mean maybe that's the scissors there.
Yeah. Right. I think that's the way to do it. Either way, one of those
Jim
teams,
and Joe.
I say 82-75. Baylor, Dave is taking the Zags to roll here. One whining moment. We set up this hotline. If you lost on that crazy buzzer beater or just have a bad beat tonight's game, or we want to hear about it. We want to hear all the tears in your voice. We want to hear about the Jims and Joels that let you down at 818-208-1681. And we'll put it to the one shining moment music, and we'll play it Wednesday night on this podcast. Yes, let's hear about all your bad beats and bed eggs.
You barely survived, right?
What do you mean?
I saw you on the social media watching the game, and while Jeff Schwartz, our pal who just roots for the Pac-12, roots for the entire conference like a weirdo, you were living and dying with every possession.
Oh, money wise. Yeah, yeah. Well, so I have a lot.
You just need a straight up win, right?
I had them right. I had them on the money line tied to Stanford ladies yesterday, which was nice. That was also a very fun game. Oh boy, they almost blew that against that upstart Arizona team. And I had Gonzaga tied to Jordan Spieth. I had them really everywhere. But I also, in that Fox Bet Live game we play, I have Baylor as a 7-1. I really could do well with them if they won the whole thing. So this is where I get crazy. I would have lost thousands and thousands of dollars, but would have stayed alive, still alive in that Fox Bet Live, the TV show we do on FS1. So I was conflicted, as I always am. Nothing could be easy with me, Dave. You know that.
All right. Well, yeah, I didn't know how to feel about it because I saw you take to it that you were very nervous that if the Zags
there's so much fun to root for. And aside from being the local team, that UCLA team, right? That Tiger Campbell, the Riley's fun to root for. They just look like they're having fun playing the game. Obviously, Johnny Juzang, that Hawkes, I feel like he should score 30 points a game. I feel like he gets to the rim every time. I don't know what happens with this team.
Yeah, I don't. I said 5 minutes ago about the pro prospects for Suggs and where he might go. That is part of the charm of it. You know, we talked about that on -3 with Hench. It's what's part of the fun is knowing that real Cinderellas, and UCLA isn't a real Cinderella like we've talked about, but in the olden days, the thing that's been lost, but it's still even there with these teams that are, you know, with Gonzaga, even look at Timmy, really take a good long hard look at that guy. That guy is maybe going to end up being the, if they win it all and, you know, things break right tonight for him, he's going to be the most outstanding player. Look at that guy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's lifted fewer weights than I have, you know? I mean, and I picked up a couple of those ones that, you know, like the wife uses on the treadmill or whatever. Like that's about as much weightlifting as I've ever done. And that's more than Timmy's done.
I agree.
It's fun to see these guys who have no future in basketball. Like Timmy, do you think he projects? Like Juzang going into the tournament wasn't a draftable guy. I think now when you watch him play, you get into your head like, ooh, he's going to be a lottery pick. I don't think he is. And I don't think Timmy's a lottery pick at any point either himself.
It's all needs. And I don't even know if these guys start on an NBA team, a lot of them right away. Right. So that's the whole thing. But definitely fun to watch. I'll tell you what, though, I have beef with FanDuel, Dave. Now, they pay our salaries here, but they've taken the fun out of this championship game.
How so?
Because what they're doing is they're offering 40-1 odds. We painstakingly went through who's going to win, Gonzaga, Baylor. We're trying to figure out. They're like, not so fast. We're giving you 40-1 odds on whoever you pick, Gonzaga or Baylor. New users get 40-1 on either team to win the championship game. You get $200 for a $5 bet. Hey, if you've been watching from the sidelines all tournament long, I don't know what's wrong with you, but now is the perfect time to get in on the action. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Make your first deposit to unlock exclusive 40-1 odds. The app is easy to use, and when you win, you get paid in as little as 24 hours. Just sign up with promo code EXTRAPOINTS so they know that we sent you. That's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code EXTRAPOINTS. Dave, you can bet Gonzaga at 40-1 odds and then put a few bucks on Baylor at, what are they, +180? What is Baylor right now? So it's not that high. It's -200 for Gonzaga and +168 for Baylor. All right, you're going to make money. FanDuel is not allowing you to lose money.
That's a good way to do it. See that you figured it out. You know what else I would do while you're at FanDuel, Sal, if I may? Also pay a visit to the NHL page because we've been talking a fair amount about how the best, most guaranteed way to make some loot is to bet whoever's playing the Sabres minus a goal and a half. It was a surefire winner. Well, the Sabres heard about it. The sports gods heard that we were stealing money and they've put an end to it, at least temporarily. We'll see. I'll update you if that changes.
Yeah.
Right now, the new Sabres is inexplicably, as much as I hate them, it's hard to fathom that this team now officially stinks. It's the Philadelphia Flyers.
They're
playing the Boston Bruins tonight. The Bruins are giving that at that goal and a half are plus 138. Get on this. I think the Bees found their game on Saturday against a really good Penguins team. The way the Penguins are playing right now, for the Bruins to take them down in the manner they did, this indicates that the Bruins maybe are turning the corner a little bit, especially against the Flyers, who are just, like I say, inexplicably woeful. The Bees -1.5 at plus 138. Get that as well.
I like that. I like that a lot. Yes, please. And this is where people get hurt with the Sabres. For weeks, Dave, and I picked up on it much later than Dave, was saying, bet against, short the Sabres, bet against them, give the puck and a half. You'll win every time. I think you won like 11 out of 12. Then they started losing by one goal, right? And now then they started winning a couple games. They should have beaten. Who was it that they were beating by three goals? Was it the Flyers?
They were beating the Flyers by three, and the Flyers rallied to salvage their dignity, but apparently that was only temporary because then the same thing happened, and the Flyers couldn't rally
couple
all
days
the way
later,
back. And now it's punctuated by Eddie Spaghetti's Blue Shirts losing, to the Sabres.
That was bad, too. Now, here's what I want to say. This is where people get hurt. I'm not saying the Sabres are good now, but they figured out how to be competitive.
That's right.
Back off that trend for a while. Watch them for the next three games. Maybe they'll go back to being terrible, but I have a feeling they figured out just exactly what I said, how to not lose by six goals every game. I don't know what's going on with this season. Before we close the book on this Gonzaga Baylor game, I just want to read the odds for MVP. Suggs was 8-1, between 8 and 9-1. To win the most valuable player or most outstanding player award, as it's called. And now he and Timmy are both +115. Timmy's expected to score about six more points than Suggs. Davion Mitchell, if you like Baylor to win, is +450. Jared Butler, 6-1. Corey Kispert, 10-1. Macy Oteague for Baylor, 12-1. And Joel Ayayi, who went crazy last game, is 14-1. What do we like, Timmy or Suggs? I just think those plays are so... They stand out so much that if they both put up decent numbers, Suggs is going to win it.
I know this is unsatisfying from somebody in my seat. I'll throw Suggs in because it feels like it's his moment, but I'm officially not wagering on it. I defer to you, Sal, because I have in my brain, this is a stupid tick, but it dates all the way back to 1984 when... when Phi Slamma Jamma got its second crack at a national title and they played Ahoya Paranoia. Mm-hmm. And you were thinking like Patrick Ewing, who's going to be the MVP, and Michael Graham was so good, or is it going to be Akeem, or how's this thing going to break? And then it was Reggie Williams, the upstart lanky guard for G-Town that did it, because he scored 19 in the title game. And it was like, well, obviously he's got to be it because he scored the most points in the championship game. So basically, it boils down to who's going to be the top scorer in this game. Probably Timmy. So I guess I'll reverse it away from Suggs. It feels like his moment now, but if Timmy puts 20 on it and they win the title, then he's going to be the MVP. That's how these things
go. If they're neck and neck at this point and he dominates, I guess it could be Timmy. I'm going Mitchell anyway because I think Baylor wins.
Plus
450. Yeah, I mean, it's only been a handful of times when the losing team, a player in the losing team, has won that award. All right, let's go to baseball. Got a full weekend, basically a full weekend. Not for my Mets. They might not play all year. Actually, Jake DeGrom is on the bump tonight against the Phillies, who are 3-0. That's a surprise. One of the surprises. Braves 0-3. That's a big surprise. Dave, your Pirates are 1-2, and poor Charlie Hayes' son, who was projected to be Rookie of the Year, is hurt now.
It's a home run in his first at bad. Like, ah, listen, maybe this season will be a little bit of fun. We'll watch the kids led by him, and he hurts his wrist. Yeah, I have no expectation there. It's way better. It's way more fun to watch Yankees and Red Sox fans right now. See which one can announce more loudly, like, season's over.
Yeah, yeah, like, that's fun. Red Sox 0-3.
Yankees are 1-2. And legit Yankees fans, I'm seeing on social media, some pals are like, it's over. Yanks just aren't good. Why? But unironically, just stating, like, I don't know why the whole offseason was about how the Yanks are going to be really good. You can see, like, just watch them. You can see they're not a good baseball team. So that's that. They're 1-2.
I love
Settle
it.
Settle down, everybody.
I don't know what I'm looking at here. CBS projections and Boston 1.7% to win the division. I love seeing that. And Baltimore, who's in first place at 3-0, is less than 1% to win the division. So I guess what they're saying is it's early. Who else? Houston's 4-0, Piacenti's team. My God. And Oakland, who was supposed to be neck and neck with them in the West, is 0-4. So those are surprises. Like I said, that gets over underway. I'm going to put a little on DeGrom here. What do we got here? What time is it?
Isn't that the thing?
Let's do it. -1.5 is -120 at Phillies. Moore's on the hill for the Phillies. They have to slow down a little bit. I don't like my team taking a week off, though. All right, we'll get back into it. That's a 7:05 start on the East Coast. The Sunday night game, we had not much to watch. So all eyes on the Angels yesterday. And Shohei Ohtani goes out there and throws 101 miles an hour and then takes his first swing and skyrockets it. Well, it's still going. Yeah, and then in the fifth inning, still on the hill, gets nearly broken in half. Trying to cover home on a wild pitch. That was another crazy bet. They're up 3-1. I think they had one infield hit against them, the White Sox did. And somehow that game was tied. And he has to leave the game because he's hurt at the plate. But anyway, his MVP odds went from late February from 50-1 to 14-1 odds. Dave, if I told you over under 2.5 years, Ohtani is going to become only a hitter, what would you say?
I say that's no fun. I say, come on. I say, come on, Madden, do the right thing and keep doing it this way. This is one of those things that, you know, when you first watch sports and you're like a 7-year-old, the things you like, why doesn't this happen more? Why don't guys learn to be ambidextrous and pitch like batter to batter? Like, oh, he's a lefty. Well, I'm pitching this guy lefty. Now I need my right hand glove so I can pitch to the, like, that, or a morbidly obese man in goal. Like, you know, why don't they put a fat guy to play NHL goalie? Let's see how these things go. Yes, a guy who is a slugger and a great starting pitcher. This is the brass ring for the sports fan. Don't ruin this for us. And by the way,
it's just weird that he gets hurt. He's going to be fine, but he gets hurt as a pitcher covering home, right? Not even sliding into home as a batter. It's very... So much has to go right to be able to pull off this dual purpose major league as a pitcher.
I hear you, but listen, it's the Halos. Come on, I know that they fancy themselves as a contender, but let's keep it real here. You're not the world beaters. Let's devote the season to Ohtani. The 60 Minutes did a great profile of him about 3-4 years ago, and I marveled. I'd never heard of him until then, and it's like, is this guy really going to be able to make it?
Right.
In Major League Baseball, because if this actually happens, because it was all about, like, he's going to be a hitter and a pitcher, and he's going to dominate it both, just like he does over here. And I was like, let's see. I hope he does, because that would be cool. But the injuries have gotten in the way. Just let's do this. Let's devote. We deserve it after this past.
I know. He's got to stay healthy. I mean, God, he's throwing over 100, hitting him out of the yard. A lot of fun. Did you see the Space Jam trailer? It's out. What'd you think?
No Kong versus Godzilla.
That was average at best, right?
I haven't watched it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I've read enough about it. Yeah. Okay. I read, though, I've already, spoiler alert, Kong finds a radioactive axe or something like that. It had to be that way. You can't, like, have, how could Godzilla be fighting be fighting King Kong and have it be a fair fight?
Well, is it enough? He gets though? A weapon. You have to see if it's enough. It's so funny with my kids, and you know, I figure I can get the 7-year-old watching this, right? Kong versus Godzilla. Let's do it. Mm-hmm. Come on, mm-hmm. Dad's got a streaming service that could show this, like as if it's a movie theater. We'll make popcorn. And he's not why they're not interested at all in the film until the music swells, right?
Hmm.
And then even then, like really doesn't look up from his iPad. They're trained now. The music kind of, it's Pavlovian, right? The way the music gets them to react to the movie. And honestly, other than that, he was like watching Annoying Orange on his iPad.
In 1917, that's one of the great moments in cinema in the last decade, at least, is when he wakes up after he shoots the guy in the building. If you saw the picture exactly halfway through, to my wife's annoyance, I can to the minute if I say, oh, 1917's on. When did it start? I can tell you exactly. It's like it's 61 minutes into the movie is when you will find this movie. If you land this scene, he wakes up at night after he bonks the back of his head and he gets up and he looks up and he sees the night sky illuminated by the flares and everything. And the music swells and he walks out into this destroyed town. It's all blown out and he's walking there. It's just, it's gorgeous lights out. You got to watch it.
But to your point,
the music swelling is everything. It really defines the picture. But all right, to Space Jam.
Well, I'm gonna have to sit down now tonight and watch 1917.
You do, really. It's great.
But Space Jam, I put the Looney Tunes, LeBron's Looney Tune team, -1400 over the Monstars. You can get 9-1 on the take back for that. What do you think?
I think that. Do you remember the I can't think of what they were called. The Hanna and Barbera Olympics.
The Laugh Olympics.
Mm-hmm. Remember that? There was one team with Yogi. Yogi Bear had a whole team of cartoon characters. Scooby-Doo had a team. And then there were the bad guys.
Dirty Dastardly, right?
The Dastardlies, right. And what was the greatest thing about that show was they would compete in a series of events every week. And what was great was every once in a while, the Dastardlies would win.
Right.
I think it would be great if the Monstars would win this. Wouldn't that be fun?
Well, they did that with Marvel, right? And what's his name? So who's the bad guy? T. Starts with a T. He won. The Hulk couldn't get green. Thanos, with the
thing. He won temporarily. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
Let the Monstars win, or maybe there's a nice little flip it, and, you know, LeBron becomes upset with the Looney Tunes team, and, you know, as is the case with a lot of these players, switches sides. He demands a trade halfway through the movie.
You should be a movie exec.
You should run
one of these fancy studios, because you just set up a sequel. A third leg to this. That's
can't,
what you
want. Can't even get my kid to watch Kong versus Godzilla. How am I going to be a studio executive? I know nothing about this. All right, so that looks fun. I don't know. LeBron,
who would win a fight? I told you I was going to ask you this. I'm just going to boil it down to this, unless you have a good one.
Go ahead.
What movie action heroes, human beings, would you like to see fight?
Oh.
Or I'll just throw one at you.
Go ahead, throw one at me. We got a couple of emails on this. John Wick was all over the place.
This is a common one. John Wick. Okay, go ahead. Read the email.
No, go ahead. Give me yours, and I'll because it's going to take me a second to pull it.
Jason Bourne.
Yeah.
Versus Uma Thurman and Kill Bill.
Oh, interesting. That's great.
Who would win that fight? And what I'm going to allow is
she gets a sword. You didn't like that.
She gets her sword. What you can't have is a gun, because if you're a human being and you have a gun, then the other person presumably wouldn't be able to get close to you. If the weapon doesn't leave your possession, if it stays physically in your hands or otherwise, like if you're shooting an arrow, you know, well, then what are we talking about? You're just shooting something across the way. I'm talking, it's got to stay on you the whole time. If it's a sword or an axe or the sticks, you know, that like the one Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle uses, nunchucks like that. Who wins that fight? She can have her sword.
I'm going to give it to her. Yeah. She was in a coma. She came out of that coma and almost immediately, boom, was back to her ninja tactics.
Jason Bourne got shot in the back multiple times and he came back too. So they've both been through it. Probably neither one is in their absolute pristine prime any longer based on the aforementioned injuries. but both are, you know, all-time killers. And Uma Thurman, Beatrix Kiddo, is, you know, she takes down. The thing I admire about both of them is, and what distinguishes them from John Wick or anyone else, is they're not just dealing with Hammond Eggers. You know, they're fighting the world's most lethal adversaries. And they win every time. That's really the thing
that's pretty good.
Separates them from anybody else. Jason Bourne is fighting the top, like, there are like five people on the planet Earth that might be able to kill him, and he kills them instead. He kills one. And again, this isn't me he's fighting. He's fighting one of the world's most lethal guys, you know, that could kill. They dispatch this guy specifically because he's one of the like two or three people who might be able to kill Jason Bourne, and Jason Bourne kills him with a book.
Right.
He beats the guy up with a book.
Well,
you know,
I get it. But he didn't beat up Nada, Roddy Piper, and John Carpenter's They Live. He didn't beat him up. And I don't need any sword. I just need those sunglasses for RP. And he came to kick ass and chew bubble gum, and he's all out of bubble gum. And that would be it for Jason Bourne. That's my pick.
Him I over think it's Uma, a beautiful all, homage, all the, and I'm going to allow it, even though Jason Bourne and Beatrix Kiddo have nothing to do with alien life form. But okay,
well,
that's fine.
Maybe the they should become accustomed to it.
But they have no meaning. So what? So it's like, oh, yeah, they're not aliens.
Right.
Then what? But okay, all right, listen, I like the homage to your
Roddy. I'm a sunglass half full kind of guy. Okay. I'm going Rowdy Roddy.
Fair
Jordan Lyford says the best possible matchup between two human movie characters would be Jason Bourne versus John Wick. Love the podcast, guys. Mm. Huge fan. Jordan from Maine. I had a couple other ones. Oh, again, yeah. James Brown. It feels good. John Wick versus Jason Bourne would be a great mano a mano. Maybe Jackie Chan versus Ong Bak or Bruce Lee. Interesting. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. I almost have to include Bruce Lee in there. But yeah, Jason Bourne, the superpowers get in the way. The extra
Send
points
us more
game.
Matchups. Yes. I like doing matchups like this. It's fun. You're a pugilistic expert, so send more of those. But the John Wick one, recency bias, most of his killings are delivered via gun. I mean, like, yeah, I know he
right.
takes some guys out in close combat. But again, most of those guys are Hammond Eggers. That's right. The difference.
All right, we'll talk to FanDuel to set these odds. But okay. Yeah, hit us up with more matchups. TheExtraPointsGang@gmail.com. Hey, the new Crown Royal TV spots remind fans to stay hydrated, stay royal, and to not be that person that ruins the game day experience for friends and family. And now this week, my Crown Royal Athlete of the Week is Jordan Spieth. Yes! I bet him on Saturday, Dave. I took a look at the board. I was like, you know what? I could still get 3-1 odds on him. He's doing well. He's playing in Texas. The Valero Open wins it. 18 under, 67 or better, 3 of 4 rounds. And here's what I like. He used a sand wedge. He was from 120 yards out. He used a sand wedge. Like, ah, interesting. Curious decision. He hits it, ironically, into the sand right by the green. And he turns to his caddy. He's like, my bad. That was a bad club choice. Like, imagine these guys. Who apologizes to their caddy anymore? You know, that's what it is. Right there, 18 under. He wins the Texas Valero Open. And now, 9-1 odds to win the Masters. He won that green jacket in 2015. He's going to go to Augusta and compete. I don't mind Jordan Spieth. Lot of putts to save par. Yesterday and Saturday, he's playing his best game. Jordan Spieth is my Crown Royal Athlete of the Week. Who's yours?
That's very good and advice for anybody going to the Masters this week. Don't win the par 3 tournament. I don't understand. Like, why would you try to win that when you know that if you win that, you can't win the main event? Anyway, that's my counsel there.
It's like the President's Trophy in the NHL, right? Like, don't
precisely.
Do it. Don't get that one seed.
Right. What? How much more evidence do you need that it doesn't work out for the,
you'll be golfing
for the guy
in 4
or the
days.
Team that does it? Yeah, that's exactly right. I'm going to go back to the well 6-8 weeks after I first went there in the NBA MVP race. He's starting to pull away. Nikola, if you want to say Nikola, I'm going to allow it, the Joker, however you want to do it. There was a sequence, swooning still from great college basketball and otherwise over the weekend. Late last night, I'm watching the Nugs play. And, you know, there's a sequence. There are two straight possessions with about 4 minutes left in the third quarter where Jokic, the 7-foot guy, you know, first of all, humiliates his defender at the top of the key, drives to about 5 feet from the rim, and then floats a perfect alley-oop. Then the next possession steals it, is running the floor and throws a perfect bounce pass about Jalen Suggs would envy the quality of it. And the most jarring thing is he heads towards the MVP. And like I say, the odds are now getting prohibitive in his favor. James Harden is still within reach. It's the eyeball test. It's that guy's doing it because he's Greg Ostertag. If you remember Greg Ostertag from Kansas and those Utah Jazz teams and everything, it's Greg Ostertag doing this. It doesn't compute for your eyeballs. It's the same as like when you watch movies all the time and the guy who just hosted Saturday Night Live, if you watched him play the Black Panther and then he comes out on the stage and now he has an English accent. It's like, what? How is this the same human being? It's like if it's like if Michael Jordan had a spot on doppelganger, but couldn't jump more than 6 inches off the ground. Or right. If there was a Chicago Bears QB and you're watching him and he was really good, it doesn't compute. You understand? This is Greg Ostertag dominating professional basketball. It makes no sense. And yet I tip my hat to you. And it doesn't mean that I've been drinking too much Crown Royal. It's just confusing. That's all. I tip my hat to you. Future MVP in a world of supreme athletes. The guy who looks like Greg Ostertag is the best of the whole lot.
You know, I don't know if it's too late where they are in production, but LeBron would be smart to recruit him away from Monstars and put him on Team Looney Tune. Nikola Jokic. Just do it, LeBron.
Why? Listen, if Calvin Johnson, who seems like a nice enough guy, could make himself Megatron, who's the, you know, the chief bad guy of Transformers, why wouldn't one of these guys, why wouldn't Giannis be like, hey, Monstars, you looking for a player? This guy right here.
That's true. That's your guy. All right. That was a Crown Royal water break. Moderate your drinking on game day. Stay hydrated. Stay royal. For more tips on how to crown your game day, visit at Crown Royal on Instagram. Dave, you have some minus three episodes coming up. You have a couple of them, right? Yes, as we get into a weird period because, well, first of all, we have Masters this week, so that's fun. But the next 5 or 6 weeks until hockey playoffs, which doesn't start till May 11th, I believe, we have, I don't want to say meaningless games, but we have a lot of regular season games, maybe more than we need in basketball and in hockey. But you're going to cover it all.
Yes, I'm looking forward to it all. And great news as New York, the state of New York, tracks towards legalizing things for us. This is the optimal time to jump in, and not just because Kevin Hench is. I get the moral conundrum. You don't want to support Kevin Hench because he's mean. You know, he attacks everybody.
Terrible.
But I'm a nice guy, and Eddie Spaghetti's a nice guy, and he loves his New York teams, and I love my Pennsylvania teams, and Hench loves what he loves. And we talk about all of it. The Northeast sports fan wants to be listening to Minus Three. Download, subscribe, tell your pals, all the rest of it. Good times.
Yes, we have Laugh Lines with Rachel Bonetta coming up. The Lemon Pepper Parlay guides are there. Betting Academy. We'll be doing a couple of podcasts this week. Oh, we have Card Wars, Joel. They just did an episode, right? Paula Duca, Caleb Keller.
We just recorded the second episode, and good news, they're going to spend more of your money this week.
I don't know if you saw this, Dave. They were in Kentucky in a real freaking crazy. It was the most ridiculous collectible store I had ever seen in terms of cards. And this guy went back into, what was his name? Jimmy. And he went back in his, every collectible store needs a Jimmy and a Joe. And this guy had this guy named Jimmy, and he went back in his vault and he just had a million Jordans and all these old cards and Adolph Rupps and everything. And it was spectacular. But anyway, these guys, I gave them $10,000 each and they're going to buy cards for me. What did they get me, Joel? Did I get like an Oscar Robertson or something?
Yeah, Paul opened a pack and pulled an Oscar Robertson signed gold card as well as a Joel Embiid card that he's hoping is going to go up once he's back.
All right.
They recap it today on Card Wars episode 2. Caleb spent $682. Paul spent $930. You can find out how they spent it over at Card Wars.
And by the way, don't forget, Sal, I got that Mario Lemieux rookie card.
Oh,
it's,
yeah.
It's a fun sort of gamble if you want to make it. I don't know that. I think I know the answer from my side. But if you said sight unseen, I'll give you $10,000 for the Mario Lemieux rookie card. Because at its high end, it's worth like $100,000. I just don't know the quality of
it. Is that right?
I'm not an expert to be able to evaluate. Like, yes, it's,
Do you even have it in plastic? Do you even have it?
Of course I do.
You do.
Okay. Of course I do. I told you, I put it in the bank because I don't want anybody to break in here and steal it. But it also has a sign. You know what? If you order now, I'll also include a signed Mario Lemieux puck. How about that?
Oh, that's fun. Okay.
Would you give me $10,000 for that? I would be so resentful if you did that. And then like, yeah, I just sold it. Hey, Val, I sold the Lemieux card for $125,000.
I have to look into it. I know that would be fun to do to you. I have to look into it. I have to figure out how you got it. I can't believe you still have it. You lost all of your car keys. You lost the trophy, and you claim you have this little card you still have in your possession. But hey, Joel is in the collectible space too. Joel, I'm going to make you talk about what you did this weekend. Come on, let's see the baby face. Tell Dave. Tell everybody what you did.
All right. Well, while the Final Four was going on, I was on Instagram Live on something called the Virtual Flea, 1980s something co Virtual Flea, selling vintage T-shirts. And I asked Sal the over under what he thought I made, and Sal hit. I made $2,500.
He sold T-shirts. What? That's his thing. T-shirts. He's got these vintage T. How many of those did you have to sell to get $2,500?
Nine total shirts, ranging from this Dennis Rodman Nike shirt that if you grew up in the 90s, you might be familiar with Dennis Rodman's face on the back. The
hell's going on.
And what else? Luckily, my mom didn't throw this stuff away.
Whoa. Mo Damashek has dutifully held on to all of my cards. They sit up in an attic, and she always says morbidly, like, you know, I'm not going to be here forever. You better get these cards out of here. At some point. You better do. Like, I don't know how to transport them to Southern California from Pittsburgh. Your mother saved all the I have all my T-shirts too in the other room. I just really think as soon as we finish this, Joel, you maybe want to swing by the house. I need you to go through. How much was the Rodman worth?
It went for $400.
Jesus Christ. That was not sick.
My highest selling shirt was a Bulls, Chicago Bulls championship shirt with the team on it. Went for $550. Thanks to everyone for watching. And send me your T-shirts. I need
now. These are shirts that have been washed. You've washed these over the years and they maintain their value.
I've washed them. I've taken great care of them.
They have yellow pit stains.
That's what I mean. It's like, what goes on?
I mean, listen, I don't know. You have to wear something. So
that's true.
I don't know what that means, but well, that's a good answer.
But could you imagine how much a 1986 Mets championship shirt would go for? They don't even exist.
I guess I can't imagine because what you're telling me is ridiculous. $400 or $500 used shirts. It's crazy. I'm gonna change my ending too. You have to wear something. I know.
I'm disgusted. I took some great T-shirts over the years, and I had them turned into a quilt. You know, you can do that now.
Oh yeah, you did.
I did that, but I have one of an animated caricature of Bob Knight in the 92 Final Four. Mm-hmm. Remember when he caught heat for talking about a whip and like there's a picture of him holding a whip. Mm-hmm. That would have to be worth something, wouldn't it, Joel?
Yeah, that shirt's like $30,000.
That's more than the Lemieux rookie. I gotta check in.
I don't know that making it a quilt devalued it. It might still be all right. What else is in the quilt?
Nah.
That's a good point.
Unless you got like babies vomiting on it and stuff. Right. Yeah, it's a lot.
Poop.
Wow. All right. Well, yeah, there's so many different ways to make money. The Degenerate Trifecta and I are going to try to invent a new one. We're coming on at halftime on the Extra Points Pod Twitter feed, and we're coming on and we're going to talk about, you know, this is the last college basketball game. You want to make money on the second half, we'll be there to hold your hand and take you through it. Like I said, Lemon Pepper Parlay, Laugh Lines, the Betting Academy, Card Wars, -3 with Dave.
twice this week. And a reminder to everyone out there who you may feel like underdogs, but remember, you have to wear something.